Hey, this is John Bollinger with Premier Guitar in Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm with G.E. Smith.
Hello, John.
G.E., so glad you joined us, man.
Thank you, man. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, I know you're in a bit of a hurry, and you've got the show coming up, so I don't want to take too much time.
No problem, man.
Let's jump into this one right here.
Yeah. Well, this is a 1949 Fender Champion lap steel.
Wow.
It's got what became the Telecaster broadcaster pickup in there. I know, I wasn't sitting there, but I know that Leo Fender was sitting with his wife one night in 1949 looking at this, and he just grew this into a Telecaster.
Right.
It's the same finish, it's the same pickup, it's the same knobs, it's basically the same thing. You know, he just grew it. And I truly believe that. I mean, it's funny to say, but I really do believe it. And I've been playing this a lot, and we use it in the show here.
Wow, it is incredibly clean.
Yeah, it's a good one. You know, I mean, these they're around, you know, because they made a bunch of them.
Sure.
And you can find them, and I started buying stuff a long time ago, you know.
Yeah, you got in the game early.
I was lucky, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, stuff was, there weren't vintage guitars, it was just used gear, and it was free.
Yeah, right.
Like when we'd go on the road in the old days, you know, you'd get out in the Midwest and somewhere. I'm talking like in the late 70s and early 80s, and there was so much stuff.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah, pre-internet.
Way pre-internet.
Yeah, way you know, easier time to acquire that stuff.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that is.
That's where fabulous. It started, I believe.
Oh, yeah, when you put it together like that, it's almost like archaeology, you know, kind of digging back and see where it
starts.
You can
look at it like that, man. Yeah. I believe it, yeah.
Yeah. God, I bet the knobs alone on that are more than you paid for it.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be hard to get a set of those knobs.
Yeah, because those are like the early
broadcaster knobs.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Okay, that's a very cool start. And you've got the original case, too.
No, that's not the original case. That's actually like an early 60s case, but I have the original case at home.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't want to get it all beat up. And
sure.
I want this thing to be protected, so that's a good solid case from like 62 or something.
Do you have any misgivings about touring with, you know, vintage gear like this?
No, man. Think about it. If a carpenter bought a great hammer and used it a couple times and said, this is a really good hammer, I'm just going to leave it home. It ain't going to happen, right? These are tools.
Yeah.
I truly believe they're tools, and I use them. My Telecaster here.
Okay, that's a good segue. Let's jump into this Tele.
This is a 1952 Telecaster. My mother bought me this for my 11th birthday in 1963. Okay.
Oh.
I was born in January of 52 on the 27th. This guitar is dated January 13th.
Meant to be.
52. Must have been meant to be, you know. It was obviously in much better condition when we bought it. It was a used guitar. It was $100. I have the little booklet where she paid it off $15 a month.
That is so sweet.
And I was lucky. I was lucky to get this.
Yeah. God,
I've always played this. I take it on the road. I play it. You know,
I've seen you play that
a million times.
Yeah,
I played this with everybody. You know, I took this on the road for 4 years with Bob Dylan. It's a great guitar.
Wow. So when she bought you the Telecaster, did you want a Telecaster? Or is that just
no? I just wanted an electric guitar, and to work. I wanted to play. I had gotten an offer to play with some people in Pennsylvania where I grew up. Older people. Before that, I'd played acoustic, you know, with a couple of my friends, you know, my little friends at school and stuff. And then I got this offer to play. So we went down and we looked around and they had what was probably a 59 345.
Ooh.
And the 345 was $200. And this was $100. So there was no doubt which guitar we were going to get.
Obviously.
You know? So we got this. And I'm glad, because I think if I'd have gotten the 345, I probably wouldn't have learned the way I did.
Right. The Tele is such a part of your whole thing.
It really is. You know, I'm just so comfortable when I got it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, that's great to hear where it all started.
Yeah.
Too
yeah.
cool. Okay. So that's obviously your longtime number one.
Yep.
Now, what have you made any changes to this guitar over the years?
I've had it refretted. Twice since I've owned it.
I bet.
But other than that, no. It's now it's an S. It says Esquire on it, but it always had both pickups, which kind of mystified me for a long time. But then somebody pointed out to me that in the old catalogs, there was a little thing down at the bottom of the Esquire page that said, if you want, send us $15 and we'll send you the other pickup, or send your guitar back to us in Fullerton and we'll add the other pickup for $15 in shipping. So I figure that must have been what somebody did, because it's the pick guard's right, and it's a pickup from way back then, you know. And
yeah, obviously somebody popped for the $15 upgrade.
Somebody went that $15 and went for the telly.
Yeah, know? God.
So that worked out good for me.
Wow, okay, well that is, you can't get cooler than that. You started cool, got even cooler.
So then, at some point, some years ago now, Fender said that they would make a G.E. Smith, you know, Telecaster, which I was completely, if you can imagine, just beyond honored by, you know.
Oh, sure.
And I was really, there was a guy named Mike Eldred at that time that was there at Fender, and Mike and I were friends, and I think he probably instigated it. So we got that going, and my big thing was to have the pickup sunk directly into the body, screwed right to the body, like on this lap steel.
Oh, right.
The pickup underneath there is right into the wood.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same exact pickup, but I just wanted to give it a little more sound, a little more sustain, a little more fatness.
Sure.
And it really worked, and with Mike Eldred, we worked up some very specific sort of, I wanted, you know, pickups to be a certain reading, you know, 7.4 on the lead pickup and different things.
Were you emulating your original one kind of
yes,
that set?
My original one and another, a 55 that I have that I really loved. It was like a combination of those two guitars, the 52 and the 55. And Fender made me a sort of a prototype. Mike had it made up, and man, it was great. It was perfect. And I said, yeah. And then they said, well, let's do some colors. So I said, could we do red and black too? You know, they were gonna do like a white one, you know, like a good 55 white, you
yeah.
know, a red one or a black one. Now, they asked me like how red. I said dark red, like my mom's lipstick in the 50s, you know. So they sent me this, and this was exactly right, but this was the only one they ever made that color.
Really?
Then they just went to like whatever red they use, whatever
sure.
it's called, you know. Okay. And the neck was supposed to be a certain size, and the prototyping was kind of like that. And then when they started really coming out with the production ones, they were these big necks, which I like a big neck. And the neck I designed was a big neck, but it wasn't. So, and then the pickups were really random. It was whatever they, so at first I was a little bugged by that, you know, that the
yeah.
guitar was coming out random. Then I thought, but that's how they were in the 50s.
Right.
They were random.
Oh yeah, snowflakes.
So I cooled
yeah.
out about it, you know? And then after I thought about it a while, I think, I'm guessing again, but I think what happened was Eric Johnson had done his Stratocaster.
Yeah.
And I know Eric was very particular about what went into that guitar, and I think he drove him nuts. And I came along and started saying, well, I want this and I want that. And they're like, yeah, right. You know? And they just made whatever they wanted. But there are some really good, this is a great one, you know,
yeah.
And this is just a neck, one of those big necks that they made, but it's really good. I had finish taken off of it.
Yeah, cool. So it felt like an old friend, yeah.
Just so it's, you know, the finish, I don't like a new sticky finish. You
yeah.
know, you want to be able to move around on it.
Inlays are cool, too.
So the inlays, you may recognize. I didn't make none of this up. I just did what Leo did, you know.
God, that's great, man.
Yeah. So that's how that happened.
Oh, that is really clever. I did not put it together.
Yeah.
Okay, that's three really cool instruments. Let's see where this is going.
My good buddy Rick Kelly at Carmine Street Guitars in New York City, we used to sit around and talk about, you know, the very first prototype of Tellys. You know, they made those pine bodies. I guess the story is Leo Fender and Doc Kaufman just went down to the lumber yard, bought some pine boards, came home, glued them together, cut this shape out, mm-hmm. you know, and put a maple neck on. So me and Rick used to talk about, wow, you know, if it was pine and a pine neck too, wouldn't that, you know, just like crazy talk. And then he got this couple hundred year old giant pine beams, roof beams, from a building in the Bowery in New York City, 165 Bowery, that had come out of the ceiling there. And he had all this great pine that was old and had dried and, you know, had everything that you'd want. Oh. So he made these guitars.
God, I bet that wood's got to be like...
It's like 200 years old.
Sure, yeah.
Something like that, you know, because those are old buildings down there.
Right.
150 years old anyway.
Yeah.
So this thing is, and there's no truss rod, it's a giant neck, big fat neck.
Yeah, that looks like a huge neck.
And I had some old pickups, you know, around. That's a 51 pickup that I put in it. But they're really good guitars, you know.
Wow. The truss rod thing ever give any trouble, not having a truss rod?
Not on this, no, because this wood was so seasoned. You know, this wood was alive.
Yeah, I imagine it's not
a long time ago. It's been dead for a long time and just dried out, and the resin's all dried out, and it's just solid as can be. But the guitar is so resonant. I was playing with Hot Tuna, with Yorm and Jack, right after I got this guitar, which now is some years ago. But we were playing at the Beacon Theater, and I hit a note like a one of those, and I held the guitar up in the air, and it just was sustaining, and I went bang, and I hit it. And it rang like a bell, and it just the whole guitar was doing it, not just the string.
Sure.
So this thing is pretty magical.
Yeah.
You know?
That's great, man.
Yeah. Good guitar.
Yeah, and I bet that old growth wood like that, yeah, you couldn't, it's like iron.
It's got great, and Rick knows how to cut the wood, you know, so he's got very straight grain. He also made me a bass that's fantastic. Huh. That I used when I played with Roger Waters and did The Wall.
Oh, right, which is when I think we did the last rundown on you.
Yes, when they came out and saw us. And the first note that the band plays in The Wall is a low E, ba-bong.
Right.
And man, I'd hit that in those big stadiums with the 75,000 watt PA system, that open E string on that big pine bass. Forget about it, the whole place would go,
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
That would be very cool.
Fine.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Now, amp-wise...
Amps... I got a lot of amps. You know, mostly Fenders. Here I have two old Tweed Deluxes from 58 and a 60 that I've had forever. You know, like I bought for $200 or $100 or something way back. I don't even remember.
Sure.
I've had... The sort of beat up one I've had probably since 1968 or something.
Wow.
And the other one I bought in the 70s.
So obviously you've had to do tubes and things like that, but anything else?
And actually, yeah, I put Celestion Blues, which is like a 15 watt speaker, I think, which is nice because the amp's like a 12 watt amp. So it's in that range where you can almost overdrive, you know, but you're never going to kill that speaker. Like the original Jensens, which sound fabulous, and those amps, you'll blow them up. If you take them out like I am on the road and really play them and beat them, you'll blow them up.
Sure.
So these, the Blues I've had in here a couple of years now, and they just sound better and better, and they really take a beating.
That's great. Now, volume-wise, how hot are you running those? Like, where are you?
The amps? The volume's like 3.5, and the... Because deluxes open up right there.
Yeah,
there's a spot between 3 and 4 where they really open up. And the treble's on, I think, 10.
See, most Tweed guys, that's the secret. You don't run them, when you run them too hot, you just...
It just flattens
out.
It just, you know.
Everything's gone.
The big ones you can run a little hotter, like the Twins and the Basemans.
Yeah.
You can run a little hotter, but most of them, right up to the Bandmaster, the 310 Bandmaster, 4. After that, it just distorts more.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, you just kind of lose that clarity.
Yeah.
Now, on SNL, were you running Tweeds?
I used that beat-up one a lot on SNL. I also had Basemans, which you could see.
Yeah.
You know, that amp you probably couldn't see too often because it was just on the floor. And I would use different things for different songs, you know.
Yeah. I was doing like a YouTube rabbit hole and caught that thing with you and Van Halen on the show. God, that was great, man.
That was so much fun.
Yeah. You know?
He was married to Valerie Bertinelli at the time. And he came along to New York with her when she was hosting the show. And I had an office where you could hang out and he could smoke cigarettes at the office. He was still smoking at the time. And so he started coming up a little bit to the office and hanging around. And I had a Martin D-28 up there. Not the best D-28 ever made. You know, kind of hard to play. And it was just something I could leave in the office. He picked it up and started doing all his stuff, the tapping and, you know, on 12s. And I'm like, wow, man, how you doing? And so we were just goofing around. And I said, why don't you play something? And he did. He had this sort of a lick that he had going already that he thought of, and we wrote that up for the horns, and as it came out, and he just played great.
Yeah, that was an amazing clip.
You know, the amazing thing about his playing to me is that, yeah, he does all the wah boom and blowing up and explosions and stuff, but it's beautiful. It's always beautiful what he plays. There's great fluidity and melody and real music in what he plays. You know, a lot of guys took up that style and did that kind of stuff. It's not always as musical.
Sure, yeah.
Van Halen, man, he's always musical.
Well, hearing that thing of you, I mean, it's just such a wonderful live musical moment of the two of you doing
it. Was fun. It was,
yeah, anyway.
And that was a great band.
Yeah.
You know, no normal human could have afforded that band. It took a network to be able to pay for that.
Right,
you
know? Right, yeah. Yeah, that's great. Okay, well, that's a rabbit hole you should probably go down, viewers. Watch that show. And let's talk about this pedal board. It's a fairly modest pedal board.
Really? That's modest? Because to me, that's obscenity. Because I never used pedals at all, although I had a couple of those pedals for a long time. That chorus pedal, I bought as an old Boss first issue.
Yeah.
When I was playing for Daryl Hall and John Oates. In the
really?
Early 80s. That's probably like 81 or 82. We went to Manny's.
Yeah, sure.
Street. And just went, yeah, give us all, Boss, yeah, give us all those.
Yeah.
So I have all those pedals at home, but I always use that chorus with Daryl and John.
Yeah.
Live, I would use that.
Cool.
And the,
Well, let's, you know what, let's start, let's take it right through the old
okay.
chain. Let's just hear
well,
what
Well, you got a tune-up, so we got a tuner.
Yeah.
I think that might be a
Korg.
It's a Korg.
Yeah.
That's a Korg. And then the little green guy there is a Tremadillo. That Caesar, my dear old friend Caesar, who's passed away, Caesar Diaz.
Right.
That's one of the very first ones he made when he was just putting it together. His son Alex painted that.
Oh, that's
when
great.
When he was like 6 or 8 years old, he did the painting on it. And then next is a Catalan bread.
Would you mind if we heard that?
Oh, that's a cool pedal, yeah.
Let's just... And that's like... So what do you think, what year do you think he was doing that?
That has to be from, we went out with Dylan in 88, and that's before that, so that's got to be maybe 84, 85.
Wow, about the time that he was doing Stevie Ray Vaughan's Vibroverb.
I think it's before he worked for Stevie Ray, so maybe it's even earlier.
Wow.
That's well back in the 80s.
God, okay, I got to hear that thing.
Yeah, so check this out. So that's just... Regular, no pedals on.
Yeah, just straight.
Okay.
Right.
But he's got a speed pedal on it too.
Oh. God, that's great.
Yeah, it's good.
Man, having that double up switch.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, Caesar always had good ideas. He also made me, back in those days, you know, the old Fender reverb units?
Yeah.
He made me a reverb unit with tremolo in it, with that tremolo built right into it. Ugh. So it's reverb and tremolo. And now a lot of people make those.
Yeah.
That's Caesar made those, the first ones.
He that's really great. Okay, yeah. Well, that's fabulous.
Then next, this is a Catalan bred plate reverb pedal. I also have their spring reverb pedal, which is also great. That company, Catalan Bread, makes great stuff.
Yeah, great company.
I truly love their pedals. I also have one of their What is that? Can you read that?
Yeah, the 5F6.
5F6. So it's like a 5X, like an old Tweed Bassman. But it's a great distortion pedal, and I love it because it's not fuzzy distortion, you know?
Sure.
I don't like that fuzzy distortion. I did that in the 60s. I don't need to do that again. So it's just a good, I rarely use that, but man, when that kicks in, it's nice. It's just boom.
Sure.
A good punch.
Okay.
And then coming around the corner is my original, in like 1972, I saw Little Feet.
Oh, play. Yeah. Lowell
First
George,
album,
man.
Four-man band. Lowell George. And he had one of these Mutron pedals like this. It's I like a real slow like.
Yeah.
You know, you can do a.
Yeah.
You can do all that. But I like that real. Man, but it's great.
That is great.
That's a cool pedal, and I just like it because I've had it all that time.
Sure. Now that's probably got like a hard AC line out.
Yes.
Like you can't run that into
hard AC line out.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Cool.
And then this is the heart of my deal here. This Tone Bone Switch Bone. I've had that for a long time. I don't remember when they first started making those, but whenever it was, right away a buddy of mine, this great musician in New York, guy named Mike Nolan, who often finds things first. He said, you gotta get one of these things. This is so cool. So I use two amps. This has two outs that are buffered.
Oh.
And that if the two amps are out of phase with each other, there's just a little phase switch on there. You can put your amps in phase,
well, that's
which is great,
right.
You know? It's also got like a boost. It's got a mid boost or just a power boost, like 5 dB, 10 dB boost. And that radio company, everything they make is so good and so well made. I've got a bunch of their stuff now, and I love it.
It's great. So you can switch between one or the other or both?
One or the other or both. You can set the polarity, grounding. It's got a grounding. If there's a buzz in the room,
sure.
You know, it really helps with that. And it's got the different boosts, mid-range and gain boost. That's a really good pedal.
That's great. Okay, so from
then,
the Tone Bone.
Analog man.
Is it the
what's it called?
Decompressor?
It's a compressor.
Yeah.
It's two different compressors.
Oh,
one's the old orange squeezer.
And the other one's the Ross.
And one is the Ross.
The gray Ross, cool.
And that was given to me by John Caron, who's the keyboard player, guitar player, all different things with Roger Waters. Still playing with Roger. John's a fantastic musician. And he gave me that. He said, man, you should have this. You know, because I didn't have a lot of pedals.
Yeah.
But if you play with Roger, you gotta have some pedals.
Yeah.
I got that. And that's a really good, very useful compressor.
Cool.
You know, you can smooth it out. And
yeah, in listening to you, it's not like you're hitting a lot of, it's not like you're on your board tap dancing all
no.
the time. It seems like you pretty much get a tone going and
yeah,
that's
your... I use reverb pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
And I'll kick in the compressor, like when I play the lap steel, I use the compression.
Sure.
You know, it's great for that. Every once in a while, I'll throw the tremolo on.
Now, what is this final mystery one that's sideways?
Yeah, that's the mystery one. That's from Pennsylvania, where I'm from.
All right.
That is a very cool thing that's just on all the time. This is called this is the Chase Tone Secret Preamp.
Okay.
And back in the 70s and 80s, there were those big echo units that we all played through. Made by, I can't remember now, who made them. Somebody will know.
Yeah.
Who made them.
Yeah, put it in the comments if you're one of those geeks that know.
Somebody
it.
Knows. I know. I just can't remember the name of the company. I played through one with Hall & Oates all the time. It was always on. Because inside of it was this weird little preamp kind of thing that just made your guitar sound good.
Oh, is it the Echoplex?
Yes.
Echoplex, that's it. Yeah, they did have an amazing preamp in it.
Maestro? No, it wasn't the Maestro. It was somebody else made it. Anyway,
yeah,
it had this amazing preamp in it. So this guy at Chase Stone, he's making these things, and it's great. And it's just on all the time. And there's like a dark setting, 70s, I think it says. You can read one of those three settings.
Yeah, yeah, it's 70s EQ, and then there's mid, dark, and bright.
Yeah. And I usually use it in the middle.
And you set it and forget it, and
it's just there.
That's it.
Boom, it's about halfway up, and it's really great.
Do you keep it sideways so you won't be tempted to step on it?
No, I keep it sideways because I don't have a cord long enough to lay it down. And it just bends sideways for about 6 months, and I kind of like it.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Because it's a secret.
Yeah. That's great.
That's a great pedal.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I love that so many ear levels. See, like, I mean, I'm always jacking with my pedal board.
My level, so. Come on. I'm on the same level as everybody else, man. Well, just another sucker on the vine, you know.
See, that's great.
That's true. That ain't great. That's just true.
Well, you're a humble legend, and
I've worked with legends. I myself am. Oh. I have worked with them. I was very lucky on
all
that
of
score.
Them. Yeah. God, I'm like
really lucky.
Yeah, your resume is, I mean, all of them, man. Mm. Yeah. Well, such a treat to meet you. Thanks a million, G.
I always like to talk about gear, you know?
Yeah, right? It's what we do. Yeah, what we do. Well, till next time.
Thanks, folks.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for watching the latest Rig Rundown. Guess what? Every week, we upload a brand new Rig Rundown to PremierGuitar.com a full week before it's available here on YouTube. So to get your gear fix as soon as humanly possible, go to premierguitar.com/rigrundown. And while you're there, be sure to sign up to get an email notification so you're the first to know as soon as each week's new Rig Rundown is available. Cheers, see you soon.